Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Beat. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Interesting music choice from one Jack Fritz. John Barchard in for Joe Giglio. Of course, the brain trust of all things Sixers in the room with us. Derek Bodner, Kyle Newbeck. Gentlemen, it's been an interesting week here, where the past couple of days.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about, John.
That T.J. McConnell triple-double was really
phenomenal.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sixers have won five in a row. The kind of the rush of the Eagles Super Bowl, I think, is helping both winter sports right now. As they haven't lost since, but Kyle, you wrote something for the Philly Voice that dropped the last couple of days here, kind of explaining exactly what happened in the last 6 months with Markel Fultz. What did you find out?
Well, so Derek and I have been dancing around this subject on these airwaves for months now, and this is really the culmination of a lot of work. And I guess what I would say is what the public didn't know was that when the Sixers were saying Markel Fultz was out indefinitely and that he's not doing anything, he was still behind closed doors shooting jump shots and working. Like, that's, it never stopped. And so, number one, that calls into question the severity of any kind of health problems he was dealing with. Number two, the fact that they were, the Sixers are misleading you on some level. Then there are other things going on. He's doing virtual reality training, which is fairly unprecedented for a basketball player. You've seen it a little more in football, yeah, and baseball, but not in basketball. So that tells you that's a little bit unorthodox, and they're trying some things because they are confused by this situation. They're trying to find a solution for a kid who they thought was going to be ready soon, as of December. That's why if you look at their schedule of press releases, they very much expected him to, once we were hitting end of December, early January, and I reported several times, I said that I think the Sixers believe he'll be back soon. I heard that Markel was as good as 90% of UW Markel at one point in December.
And, which is very encouraging.
Right, I mean, you hear something like that, yeah, from somebody around the team, and it's like, hey, great, that'd be awesome if he came out beginning of the year. They get that 3 or 4 months before the playoffs, and he gets reintegrated, and good, they're off and running. Their core three guys, they're here, they're back, they're together. But that is not the case, and Brian Colangelo goes out in that press conference Friday and says his range is within the paint. I think that's a very realistic way of putting it from what we see, and it's a big mess. I mean, there's people pointing fingers in all directions, inside and outside the organization. And then Derek today followed up with a story about the origin of some of this.
Yeah, so what did you then find out from that, Derek?
Well, the one thing kind of Kyle left a little bit up in the air was what happened over the summer. You know, Brian Colangelo has always said, you know, we don't know whether or not changing his jump shot caused a shoulder soreness or whether or not the shoulder soreness caused him to then change his jump shot. And he said that back in October, and it kind of threw a red flag because that feels like something you should know. And then he said that again last week after 5 months of having a chance. You know, we asked again, you know, what was the cause? And he said, well, we don't know whether or not changing the jump shot caused a soreness or the soreness caused a changing jump shot. And he started asking around, and the process has been going on for a long time. And people who saw his workouts over the course of the summer, dating back to before the draft, dating back to the draft workouts, you know, say that there were changes going on at that time, changes that then continued over through, you know, August and early September, as Markel Fultz and his personal trainer worked to rework his jump shot and make pretty significant alterations. Now, I will say, and I have to say this, his personal trainer, Keith Williams, does deny that these changes were made. He says they worked a little bit on shortening up the dip in his shot, the kind of the bottom where you kind of build a base of power from. He did say they worked a little bit on that, but anything larger than that, he denies. But anyone who was around those workouts, anyone who really talked to people that were in those workouts has come away saying that, no, he made very deliberate changes over the summer.
Now, do we have an answer on why they tried to decide to rework his shot, or him trying to rework his shot, or like what went into the process of needing to do that or feeling the need to do that? Does anybody know?
I mean, I think some of that is just the common sense stuff you would think. He's preparing for a deeper three-point line. He has actually alluded, Markel himself has alluded to that in other media availability he did during training camp. He said one of the big things he's prepping for is to play as more of a catch-and-shoot guy. He knows he's playing off of Ben Simmons, off of Joel Embiid, off of J.J. Redick even. I mean, he's coming off screens. He's doing different things. He was preparing for that deeper three-point line and to be more of a catch-and-shoot guy. And because of that, he wanted to have a quicker release, a tighter release, and tighten up the mechanics. So it's the simplest explanation. A lot of times the simplest explanation is the reason.
Well, that makes sense, too. Like, yeah, if you're going into that and you think you need to have that much, like J.J. Redick has shown throughout his entire career to be that type of guy, I understand that, too. 888-729-9494. If you have questions for Kyle or Derek, we're certainly going to get into a lot of those. And how do you guys feel, and I think a lot of people have asked this question, especially the past couple of weeks here. J.J. Redick has made strong comments about, hey, like, this kid is 19 years old. You guys need to back off, let him figure this stuff out, and just go with the flow of this. And I understand where he's coming from. And obviously, with both of your articles on The Athletic and Philly Voice, I don't think you guys really were trying to dig in or make this kid look bad at all.
Not
you're just
all.
Trying to display what's going on in the fairest way possible. But does any of that kind of resonate with you guys when you're covering a team and you know this kid is 19 years old, enjoying the Chick-fil-A and trying to figure things out? Because there's a part of me that goes like, God, there are certain lines I certainly wouldn't want to cross if I found some stuff out or whatever. But Derek, how does that make you feel when J.J. Redick says those things?
I think by and large, J.J. is doing what J.J. should be doing. You know, his role, his perspective is as a leader on that team, as a teammate, as a friend of Markel Fultz. He should be trying to shield him any way he really can. But Kyle and I have to have a different perspective as people who cover the team. Our job is basically to get information for the fans. And because of that, we have a different role than he does and a different perspective than he does. And nothing is personal. It almost can't be at that point. Once you make it personal, either good or bad. And by the way, this is a team that I think by and large is filled with really good people. Like, I don't, there's no one on the team that I think is necessarily a bad person. But once you let that, the fact that you say, oh, well, he's a 19-year-old kid, at that point, you can't be an objective journalist. So we have to kind of separate, look, he is a 19-year-old kid. This has to be impossibly tough for him. This is something where if I was going through it, you know, he kind of subtweeted, I don't know if he subtweeted Kyle or me or whatever article came out about don't believe everything you read. And I put myself in those shoes. If I was a 19-year-old kid being dissected like this, I would probably have a much worse reaction than that. I was a complete moron at 19. So I think he's handling it pretty well. It is a tough situation, but by the same token, Kyle and I still have a job to do.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
I agree with Derek in that J.J. is doing what any teammate should do here. Like, they're going to circle the wagons and protect this kid, and they should. Those guys sweat next to each other every day. They're trying to work towards a playoff push, maybe win a playoff series this year to build for the future, do all that. They have to do that. But we are here we are trying to get to the bottom of things that the fans want to know. And the questions that I get every single day, what's up with Markel? When I'm not at a practice, why are there no videos of Markel today? And I will say, and Derek didn't say this, but I have much more video on my phone of Markel that has never been tweeted. It's never been put in an article. It's never been used.
And that's,
some of it's good. Some of it is very bad. And so like people think, hey, you're just trying to make them look bad. If I wanted to make them look bad, I could post every video I have. And I think by and large at this point, it would weigh towards the bad side. Just because, look, we're seeing a kid who's in the middle of a a redevelopment of his jump shot. That it's an ugly process. And so it's going to look, if our interest was in making Markelle Fultz look bad, number one, this story would have come out. These stories would have come out a long time ago. Number two, we would be doing a lot more in terms of actively trying to do that. What I have done, what I know Derek has done, is get to the bottom of this story, get all the perspectives of everybody involved, and try to find out what people want to know. And that's all I'm here to do.
And here's the other thing. His general manager, the guy who should be looking to protect him, opened up months of speculation and uncertainty when he said, well, we don't know. Maybe changing the jump shot did cause a shoulder pain. You can't open that up and expect people not to then go pursue the truth. So, you know, I think it's like Kyle said, there's not, you kind of have to balance it, but by and large, we have to try to get information on what is one of the stranger rookie seasons and one of the strangest developments I've seen in my time covering the sport.
Yeah, I've never heard of anything like this. And from people I talk to over there, they've never seen this either. I mean, the general manager, the head coach have never really seen anything like this too. But I agree, Derek. I mean, this is, if you say chicken or egg, people are going to go find out if it was chicken or egg.
I want to find out. What that there's a reason that's an age-old question. People would like to know the answer.
888-729-9494. Derek Bodner from The Athletic, and, of course, Kyle Newbeck from the Philly Voice. We're talking about Markelle Fultz and this Sixers team, where it sits right now. Let's start things off with David in Lower Merion. What's up, David?
Hey, guys. Not much. The Fultz thing. The guy's not going to pan out. I mean, that's obvious.
I won't go there.
I think that's pretty crazy to say at this point. Yeah.
Please, I mean, everyone heard you guys, and I appreciate, I respect what you guys said, but just hear me out, please. The guys, you guys have seen his shot. I used to play basketball. The guy's a joke in terms of his shot right now. Whether it's his injury, whether it's someone tampering with his shot, this has never, ever been done in the NBA in terms of someone saying, oh, I'm going to change my shot all of a sudden. Now it's, I need to rework it. This is not pitching, or this is not a different sport. This guy can't shoot the, freaking ball. He's not going to pan out. He's absolutely done. One second.
When Steph Curry went from junior high to high school, he completely overhauled his shot. He spent the entire summer in the paint trying to relearn form shooting because it was such a drastic change. Now, just because a guy can't shoot now and just because a guy lost the shooting motion now doesn't mean he can never reclaim it. This was a guy who was an elite shooter, a guy who can make shots in traffic over people. It's way too premature to say he can't get that back.
Talking about one person out of thousands. No one reworked the shot in the NBA.
Yes, they do.
That's true that people don't rework it in the NBA. That is true. That was a mistake. It shouldn't have happened. That doesn't mean just because it happened later in life, he can't relearn it, though. He can't learn the new motion.
Hello?
Yeah, we still got you, David.
Guys, please.
I mean, if you're just going to go, guys, please. It's never going to happen. He's going to be bust. Like, that's part of it that you should never kind of dive back into.
Well, something being unprecedented or new that we haven't seen before doesn't mean it's not going to work or that you can't fix something. Just because you personally know less about something doesn't mean that you can just assume the outcome. Like, there's no chance. Anyone saying anything with certainty right now is a fool, I think. I could sit here and tell you, people have asked me for the last couple of days, do you think Markelle Fultz is going to play this season? If I told you I knew,
he shouldn't.
I don't think he will, but if I said I knew that with any certainty, I'd be an idiot. I mean, I told people in December, I think it'd be crazy if he doesn't play by January 15th. Well, now it's February 13th right now, and he looks even further from playing than he did 2 months ago.
Our predictions the last 2 years on Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz's return dates, not great.
And this is what I don't, and something happened too, because I certainly remember Markelle Fultz saying something, I've got a little surprise for you, or there was like, right before the London game,
a couple of times,
was like, hey, there's something that's going to happen. I feel like there is a conversation that might have been had there, but we'll keep the phone lines going. Anthony in New Jersey, you're on with you guys. What's up, bud?
Hey, how you guys doing, man? I'm going to try to just kind of look at the the way Sam would have looked at this and the longest lens in the room. I mean, initially, the decision to trade up with the Boston Celtics is the one that I have a problem with. I have no problem even with the selection of Fultz, even with how things have turned out today. I mean, I just think that Boston had such a guard-heavy team between whether it was Isaiah Thomas or Kyrie Irving, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart. They weren't going to pick another guard because he wouldn't have played. They're kind of in that now with Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier and Kyrie. You know, they were going to draft a wing because they like non-traditional wings that could play the 2, 3, or 4 and the Gordon Hayward, the Jason Tatum. I think they would have took Tatum at 1, and I think the Lakers would have been probably just as enamored with LaVar Ball and Lonzo, and we could have had them at 3 and still had both our pick coming up, the Lakers pick, our pick coming up in 19, and the Sac pick. So we could have four first-round picks in the next two drafts. My problem was with the decision to move up, and you don't need to hand Boston any more future assets when they were holding the Nets picks forever.
Well, okay, so here's what I'll say. And at the time, I covered the draft for an outlet called Draft Express, which has now been absorbed in ESPN. But the word on the street is that the Lakers really, really liked Fultz, and there was no guarantee they were going to go Lonzo Ball at 2. But there's also one other wild card in that equation, and that's if Boston really believes that Jason Tatum is the number one pick in the draft, the best player in the draft, they could have probably gotten him at 5, probably gotten him at 6. Like, he was not going top 3. They could have traded down. Sacramento was real interested in using their 2 picks. I think it was 5 and 10, maybe.
Yep,
I'm
5
going
and
off.
10. Yeah. Yep.
And moving up, there's no guarantee somebody would have moved up to take Markelle Fultz at 1 or 2. And I will also say, in terms of Sam Hinkie, longest view in the room, all that stuff, assets, they valued the number one pick in the draft exponentially more than even 3, 4, or 5. Like, you look at the history, there is a lot higher success rate in terms of drafting a franchise player at those spots. Now, that also determines, I don't know how they would have rated Markelle Fultz. We'll never know that. Sam Hinkie will never, ever, ever tell any of us. But as a concept, I don't think trading up is something he wouldn't have done. I just don't know the details on the player evaluations.
And I also, like, there's a lot of revisionist history now about the trade and Markelle Fultz in general, because we see this Markelle Fultz and not the one from Washington. I believed, and I'm pretty sure Derek was with me, or at least close to where
I mean,
was.
You know, I was. We do a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, he was, for me, the consensus number one guy. And
it wasn't
was like
question.
Pretty clearly yeah. The number one guy. It wasn't like, hey, he's like barely above a couple guys where you don't make that kind of trade to get him. He was not only the consensus number one guy for me, he was also the perfect fit for the two core pieces that were already here. So the logic of the trade and the reason you go and get all that makes sense to me. It's everything that has happened since that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, like, no, if we're talking about like an unprecedented thing that has never happened before in the NBA, you're looking at it. And I don't think anyone could have known that this was going to happen 4 months ago. It's impossible to kind of have that feel.
He is right. Trading two likely top 6 picks is a huge risk. You have to be sure on the prospect, which is tough. But if there's ever a spot you're going to do that, it's the number one pick.
Yeah, it's a good risk to take. Let's go to Will in Pensacola. What's up, Will?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, listen, when I hear about Markelle Fultz and when I see what's going on with him, man, I got two words. Nelson Aguilar.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the same situation, different sport, but Nelson crushed in college, was dominant receiver in college. We wanted to run him out of town and gave the guy a chance to get himself together, and he was pivotal to this run that we're all celebrating. Give Markelle a chance. Let him figure it out. Man, my son is 20 years old, and I'm like, this kid is only 19. I can't imagine my son on that stage. You understand? He's a kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Will, and I think we all agree here that my thing this whole time has been, I hope Markelle gets the chance to figure this out and he doesn't get too unfairly thrown under the bus before it's time to. I mean, look, if we reach next season and he still looks like he does right now, we'll have to have a very different discussion. But he has a lot of time in front of him to get this right, and I think we all think he deserves the chance to.
I mean, if Markelle Fultz is going to be here, he's not going anywhere. He shouldn't go anywhere. And if he just regains that jump shot, I am incredibly confident in the rest of his skill set. He will be a very, very good player. I just have no way right now of gauging whether he will.
Yeah, and we appreciate the call, Will. Thanks for hanging out. And that's one thing that I kind of want to get back into is just there is some blame, at least for me, on this situation alone. And again, I think it steers towards the organization. I want to get your thoughts on that as well. As it's Kyle Newbeck, it is Derek Bodner, it is The Beat, and it is right here on Sports Radio 94 WIP. Oh, Fritzy's really got it tonight. John Barchard hanging out with Kyle Newbeck from the Philly Voice and Derek Bodner from The Athletic. And
we need a video of some, like, sad puppies or something.
Just to be clear, Kyle and I do not pick this audio. Yeah, just to be clear.
No, I have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, this is in the arms of another angel behind the glass here. But, gentlemen, this is where I keep coming back to with this in particular. I know it's really easy to blame a Sixers organization for the messaging, the back and forth here. How much ownership of this is on them? Because I look at it and go, why is he out there if this is really happening? Why are you giving these guys an opportunity to see his shot every day, to, you know, maybe even have that pressure to go, hey, man, we need you to kind of get out there. You're the first round pick, et cetera, et cetera. Not that I'm saying that's what's happening here, but Derek, in your mind, how much responsibility is on the Sixers here for the messaging?
So, I mean, there's two perspectives I come at. One is a reporter's perspective, in which case the updates were not great. The other is in what I'll call the common sense perspective. And from the team perspective, if you're trying to protect the player, like I said, you don't cast doubt on what happened with the injury right from the jump. You don't say changing his shot might have caused the injury. You don't do that. The updates, you know, I think they're a little too optimistic in the December 9th update when they said the soreness was resolved and the imbalance was resolved. And I think they're to update in the early January. January 2nd, they said he had, what was January 2nd? He was cleared. He was
the final stage of his return to play program.
And then January 9th, he started playing 5-on-5. And at that point, they started putting him out there. And they obviously miscalculated how close he was, like Kyle said. And I think doing that really put him under a microscope, put up the pressure way more than really needed to be at that time.
So, Kyle, I turn to you with the same question.
Look, he's their player, so ultimately they have to take some of the responsibility here. It's hard to say because, again, as Derek explained at the top of the show, a lot of the problems happened away from them in terms of the mechanical fixing.
To their credit, this was an impossible situation, which there was no way to really guesstimate how long of a timeline
exactly. That part is very difficult. And the other thing you have to consider is even after they find this out, and they believe they know that Keith Williams is working with Markel and there's a problem that stems from this, even if they believe that, they can't go to the I don't think they can go to Markel and say, you can't work with this guy anymore. I
mean, he's been with him his entire life.
Right. I mean, he's a extended member of the family, and he's been working with him for a long time. He's part of why he got to where he is. So they can't be like big brother and control his life. They can't follow him around and say, you can't go work out with whoever you want to work out with. They can express reservation and say, look, this is what we recommend you do. I mentioned in my story, he worked out with Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, and that was approved through the team. That's something that he does on the side when he can't work with the members of their normal coaching staff. And that, I think, is something that's more reasonable than, look, he's like a cloak and dagger in some gym in Jersey yes. and like doing stuff like that. So I think they're trying to wield some influence here. It's just a matter of, look, he is an adult. People want to call him a 19-year-old, and he is still a kid, but he is a professional athlete now, and he has some level of autonomy in all this, and that comes with pros and cons.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions still yet to answer, and certainly want to get to your calls as well. 888-729-9494. Let's kick things off with Ross in D.C. What's up, Ross?
Hey, guys. So first of all, I just wanted to thank you both. In some respects, this is a thankless task. It's a difficult situation, but you both clearly have put a lot of effort in for a long time, but we've seen the results of your efforts in the last 2 days in these stories. I have two questions for you about the fault situation. The first one sort of stems from a theory I've seen online that was put forth by a physical therapist who deals with these circumstances somewhat regularly, obviously not as much in basketball as in other sports. But regardless of precisely when he – so this goes to question one. Regardless of precisely when he started changing his shot, which I think you've done a good job of drawing the timeline into question and pointing out it might have been earlier than was previously believed – if we were to take the doctor from Kyle, I think it was you who interviewed that doctor he saw down in Kentucky. So if we were to take at face value that he did suffer from scapular muscle imbalance, I guess the question becomes how much do we think that would still be sort of interfering with his shot? And the reason I ask is, from what I understand, there are sort of two components to the scapular muscle imbalance. There's the physical recovery of the scapula such that there are no longer problems with it in terms of the balance of those and the ability to raise the shoulders in the right ratio. But the second part of it is there's a sort of cognitive response you would have, and while it's been somewhat cheaply been referred to as yips by others, Fultz's problem, it could be a much more simple explanation, which is your brain is trained to try to avoid pain. And if in the past pain has resulted from doing something, it can take a while, and the very point of physical therapy can be.
So, Ross, so I can break down your question, because, again, there's a lot there. Are you basically just asking chicken or egg there, more or less, right? I mean, is it the shoulder that's created the problem or whatever?
So it's less of a – let me cut to the chase on that, and I'll get to the second question.
Just real quick, Ross, because we have a lot to get to.
Yeah, no, for sure. I hear you. So part one to that would just be, I guess the question is, do we think scapular muscle imbalance accounts for the inability to change shot at this point? Because there was a difference between the
right,
shot
Kyle,
in summer league
what,
and college.
Let's hold on, Ross. Let's stick with that, because we got to let him answer the question. So is
no,
no.
That's my answer. No,
it's a long way of getting around.
Look,
that.
Okay. Look, Derek reported today, and I reported yesterday what we found. Derek said the shot mechanics changed. He hasn't been able to get them back. The shot mechanic change came before the whatever shoulder thing is present or was present. Any of that. That is the reason that, to me, if you're asking for my opinion. That's the problem. It's not any of the other stuff.
Yeah, I don't. And that question's basically already been answered. Like, there's
right. I wrote like 5,000 words on this. I think I gave my answer on this. I think Derek has his answer.
Yeah, let's go to Bill in Fishtown. What's up, Bill?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
One of the things I look at when I look at this situation, and it brings me back to the way the Sixers do business. And the way they, ever since, the Hinkie years, and how they shut guys down, and they, they put a clamp on them for a year or so, and the only one that was really warranted probably was Embiid, and that was because it was serious injuries, surgeries, things like that.
I mean, Simmons did break his ankle. That's
right, but
semi-warranted, at least.
He probably could have came back last
year. I don't disagree.
As far as Fultz goes, I've seen his workouts tape pre-draft when the Sixers brought him in to work him out. And his shot was all bent. You're not going to tell me that before they drafted him that his shot wasn't goofy before that. I don't know. I think they made a horrible mistake by drafting him, number one. I think they had their mind made up that they were going to draft him no matter what, and it didn't matter what happened because the way the Sixers explain it was somebody got in and messed with his shot from the time he was injured, from the time he got injured in summer league to the time they figured all this out, which was maybe a 2 or 3 week period. Your shot doesn't change that much in a 2-3 week period.
Well, Bill, but I guess I hear where he's coming there, but I don't even, okay, you want to go by the workout video that he came in summer league, it didn't look like that. There was no droopiness to his shot.
It was out in front, farther in front of his face, though. There was a change there for sure. And I did, like I said, I talked to people who were privy to these workouts, and he did not shoot the ball great. And when we were there at the Philadelphia one, he did not shoot the ball. At the time, I said, don't worry about it. These don't matter.
Maybe a hint there.
Yeah.
What I'll also say is addressing whether the Sixers want him to play, want him to sit out and have a redshirt year. They do not want him. Like, this is not what they wanted coming into the season at all. Like, I definitely feel like they would have, like, they thought he was going to play and play well this year. And I don't think they're holding him out just to redshirt him.
If Markelle Fultz showed up at the practice facility tomorrow morning and said to Brett Brown, I'm ready to go tonight, he would be in the lineup tomorrow night against Miami. He wouldn't start, but he would play.
He'd be there.
There's absolutely zero doubt in my mind that if Markelle showed up and was ready to go, it's go time. The team wants him to play. The team needs his skill set and have needed it all year. There would be no hesitation on their part.
All right, let's go to Mike in Malvern. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, guys? The Fultz thing, just let the guy play, in my opinion. Let him play, you know, feel it out, see how it goes. The guy's obviously, you know, something's going on.
I mean,
nobody knows.
Don't you think he's playing 5-on-5 in private? Like, don't you think they have an idea whether or not he can play?
Yes, but the guy is a first-round draft pick. You guys know what's going on with him. Let him play. What's the worst thing that can do?
Crush his confidence.
Yeah.
Confidence, obviously we made a mistake drafting him. So move on.
What is it with that, Mike?
Get him out of the league. What's the big deal?
Hold on, Mike. Can I ask why there are so, well, maybe it's just a general question. Why is the bus label happening so fast with this guy?
I mean, I get the frustration, but yeah, it's a situation. I mean, anytime something this unprecedented happens, I get it in some regard, but their concern right now isn't to get him on the court. Their concern right now is to get his jump shot back, and they're going about it the way they think is best.
Understood. But let's face the facts. The guy has not been on the court. There's no injury. And you guys need to stop making excuses. The Sixers made a bad draft pick.
I'm not the one making any excuses.
You guys have continued to make excuses, and they need to play him. He's not injured. You guys are talking about his psyche, his this, his that, comparing him to this one and that one. Put him on the court. See what happens. Let the chips fall where they may. Why do you guys and the Sixers management, why are you guys in cahoots? I would like to know that.
In cahoots? Mike, what the hell are you talking about? This is stuff that the Sixers don't want out there.
I was going to say, you think the Sixers wanted us to report these things the last couple of days? Like, this is going to be a fun time when we go to the games and the practice facility, that the players who see that we reported all kinds of personal and private things about what Fultz is going, you think that's going to, like, anyone who thinks that this is just like some PR move is out of their mind.
Yeah, this is the worst PR move ever.
Yeah, if that's the case. Like, what are we talking about here?
And listen, it might sound like I'm making excuses when it comes to this, but like, I just want to wait and see how this unprecedented thing kind of unfolds after the next year. Yeah, maybe he is a bust. I'm not saying that you don't or shouldn't have those concerns, but like, man, we certainly jump on that
so many times. Four games.
The same way that Embiid would never play again. He's not that good of a player anyway.
Dario's never coming over.
Blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. That's what I'm just saying. Just, unfortunately, got to wait with this thing. More with these guys. It's Kyle Newbeck. It is Derek Bonner. I'm John Barchard at Sports Radio, 94 WIP. 888-729-9494. We wrap up the final segment of the beat. Jody Mack coming in after that. I'm John Barchard, sitting in with Kyle Newbeck from the Philly Voice, and of course Derek Bodner from The Athletic. I don't know. I completely disagree with their last caller on a bunch of things, but I think you think about shutting him down for the year. I don't see that shot improving in the next couple of months, and I certainly don't see it happening on the court if you play him.
I mean, I think right now, and this is kind of just speculation, but I wonder if maybe you don't shut him down officially because it's kind of like a carrot for Markelle.
Sure,
it's something for him to chase, and not that he's not going to work hard anyway, but you have kind of like a little extra pep in your step when you have a chance to play. Do I think he's going to play? No, I don't.
Yeah, I think I have the exact same. I think it's a light at the end of the tunnel for him. It's like, hey, all these jumpers, all the videos of me looking like he does going around, like, none of that will matter if I get to play. And if you take that away from him, that's only going to add to what's already a difficult situation.
All right, let's go to Vinny in West Philly. What's up, Vinny?
Hey, yeah, what's going on? How y'all doing tonight?
Good, great, man.
Hey, I wanted to piggyback up the last caller, but not as intensive as he did. I think my thing is,
I know you guys doing your job right. If Ben Simmons can't shoot, right, and he on the basketball court, I see the film that y'all guys put out. He seems to move fluid inside the lane, can finish at the basket. He got to get his jump shot right. But like you said, why can't he just play?
So
I heard you say, John, his confidence might have it, but ain't nothing wrong with Ben Simmons' confidence.
He's also not a two-guard.
Yeah, so, Vinny, think of it like this. So Ben has known that his jumper has never been his strength. He's built his entire game around the fact that he can't shoot. This is very much a new thing for Markel, on top of the fact that he's 6'4 and is a very good athlete, but not an elite athlete, versus Ben, who is 6'10 and is very much an elite athlete for his size. So there are different concerns that come there, and it's also the newness and the shock of having to readjust for a critical piece of your game being gone. So it is a little bit different there.
So y'all basketball opinion. You think Markel, if he can't get his shot back, you think he damn good because he can't get his shot back from the paint?
I mean, if he can't shoot, then his fit with Simmons is going to be in huge question.
Yeah.
His skills that he has coming off of a pick and roll, because you don't have a defender on your hip, is not going to be quite as impactful. And it's going to be real hard to make a living. Certainly, I mean, NBA point guards who can't shoot are rare that are an impact player. Ben's kind of bucking the mold. And, oh, by the way, Ben Simmons right now has a better jump shot than Markel Fultz.
And
he might
not use it
in a game, but it's in practice.
Look, here's the other thing, and we've talked about this with Ben to some degree too. It's one thing when you can't shoot. There are lots of guards like a Marcus Smart that guy can't shoot even a little bit, but he will shoot. And teams might not respect him from there, but he's willing to do it, and he'll live with the consequences. If you have a player who can't shoot but also won't shoot, and teams know that, they will just stack the paint. And the problem with that for the Sixers is they can already do that with Ben Simmons.
Right.
And that really complicates things, mostly for Joel Embiid. He needs to have that space to operate down there. So if you keep adding guys onto the court that are making life difficult for Joel, it's the whole reason why Trevor Booker's fit on this team has been pretty poor so far. He's clogging the paint for Joel. Every objective of this team right now should be to build the best team around Joel. He has the potential to be the best player in the league. And if Markel can't shoot, he is not part of that best team around him.
I mean, one of the things told to me was that by the second or third day of training camp, the entire team had figured out they don't have to guard Markel outside of 10 feet. And if you have two guards on the court at the same time, that's not going to work.
So it's just like it's just like anything else.
Look,
like you're going to let TJ McConnell toss open a three, you know.
Basketball players are smart. Like in the beginning, when a guy is coming into the league, they'll give him the benefit of the doubt and they'll close out. Especially now that his reputation is out, they've seen the tape, they've seen the videos, they've heard Brian Colangelo say the things he did. All these reports are out there. They're not going to respect him from any sort of distance. They'll say, hey, good luck to you, young man. See what you can do from out there.
I will say, however, Trevor Booker, still more effective, Jahlil Okafor, and the Nets fans are waking up to that fact over the last week. Let's go to David in Texas. What's up, David?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
All right. I just want to talk about Fultz.
Sure.
It's just a frustrating situation. I never really was that high on Fultz. I mean, I thought it was a bad trade to give our arch rival a pick and who we're going to be competing to try to get to the finals. And when they actually saw him, they had him in for a workout, and then they were okay with trading him. That should have been the red flag number one. I mean, they needed a guard. They didn't take him. I mean, and because they probably weren't sold on him. I thought that Sixers could have stayed at three, and he would have fallen because the Celtics would have taken Tatum at one. Ball would have gone second. Or even if he wasn't there, oh well. But it was just, since there were like five or six, seven good players, everybody was close. It could have just stayed at three.
I don't like playing the coulda, shoulda, woulda game, especially because, again, the Markel we see now is not in any way, shape, or form the Markel we saw then. And look, if we based everything based on what people saw in a draft workout, drafts would look a lot different than they do. Like, I mean, perfect example at the NFL Combine last year, John Ross runs an unbelievable 40.
Fastest time.
What did he contribute in the NFL
Zip.
This year?
Nothing.
Zero. So if we were just concerned with what guys do in a limited combine or workout setting, if that was all that mattered, we'd live in a much different world. It's crazy to think like that.
He was an incredible player last year. He was an incredible player. For
He got compared to Kyrie Irving, who left LeBron and people called him crazy, and then is leading a team that is 40-18 right now, I believe. So he was called the best guard prospect since Kyrie, and I think that was a very fair label.
Yeah, like the, I don't know, I think a lot of people, I just got to say it, but there's so many people that are having that revisionist history. There is, I mean, everybody was excited the moment that happened. I remember dancing in that studio. Like, there was, the reaction that we got was, oh my God, this is going to be a great team. He fit perfectly with what these guys were doing, with specifically everything that we've talked about tonight. Being able to have those jumpers, being able to go in and cut in the lane when you need them to, and being that third scorer that the Sixers need. Let's end things tonight with Greg in Newtown. What's up, Greg?
What's going on, fellas? Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. Look, I agree with you guys. I don't put them on the court just to see what happens. I think this team's in contention right now to make the playoffs. It's a critical part of the season. Fred Brown calls it the final third. You know, it's about to embark on. He's not looking to add. He's looking to tighten up his rotations. And I don't think, if they don't see him in practice being able to contribute in any meaningful way to the team's winning chances, I don't put him anywhere near that court. And, you know, right now it's really about getting that dynamic, that chemistry. Because basketball is a chemistry sport. Even though you got some X's and O's, it's really about flow. It's an ebb and flow, feeling the guys around you. You know, that's what basketball really is all about. So I don't like the sentiment of, oh, let's just see what happens, you know, whatever. No, man, we're at a 7 seed right now, and, you know, we're climbing the ladder, and that's my opinion. Full disclosure, I was against the pick. I was more of a Tatum, Josh Jackson kind of guy, mainly because I saw in them more of a drive. I don't really care so much that he doesn't have a jump shot right now. I think a lot of guys coming into the league, especially when they're this young, you know, they're out of high school basically a year removed when they go into the NBA, which is like 5 years removed from elementary school. I mean, for crying out loud, you know what I mean? Like, it takes a while. Jordan, the greatest player ever, didn't come into the league.
Well, a lot of people have to work on their shot when they come in. It takes a while to develop into that kind of mastery that we're all used to.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I know we're running out of time here. What happens tomorrow night as these guys take on the Heat?
Let's hope they win. That'll sort of, I mean, the winning has masked what is a really big story. If the team wasn't as good as it is, they would not be able to get away with this for so long.
Yeah.
So for their sake, they should hope that they win. And I hope we continue to see a healthy Joel Embiid.
That EAJLES thing going on kind of helped mask things too.
Yeah, that made a little bit of a difference.
You know, I think they have a chance.
Why? What happened? I don't know who's around.
I think they have a chance tomorrow night. Miami's been struggling a little bit of late, and the Sixers have been playing real well. They've been playing real well at home. They should have their full docket of players because they had today off. They could go into the break on a 5-game winning streak. I think it would make 11 straight at the Wells Fargo Center, and that would put them 5 games ahead of 500. It's a real good spot to be in, even though we spent the entire hour on a negative topic. They're in a real good spot.
Well, if you wouldn't have written some incredible, awesome, not awesome things, but just reporting the truth, it is really your guys' fault. That's Kyle Newbeck. That was Derek Bodner from The Athletic, and of course, Kyle over at the Philly Voice. Jody Mack is next. Thanks to Jack Fritz for producing. I'm John Barchard. This is Sports Radio 94 WIP.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.